is the Socially Responsible Investing Show on AM 950. I'm your host, Mike Mullins. Welcome to all. Today we're going to talk about how we help investors become better investors by helping develop a longer-term view of investing that benefits the investor and helping him or her meet money goals, and the industries and companies by providing support by their inclusion in your portfolio. You know, when a company's stock gets owned by a lot of people, it causes the price to go up, which causes their financial condition to improve, et cetera. It's sort of a ripple effect. So you do have an impact when you buy and hold stocks. Now, a longer-term view in investing can be developed by looking at sustainable industries and companies that demonstrate what industries and companies must do to provide good investment returns for their investors. This all works together in a big loop. Today, we're going to look at the wine grape growing industry and examine how this large industry is embracing sustainability in its grape growing companies' farming practices. Now, there was an interesting article a few months ago in Wine Spectator magazine. The title of the article is called Giving New Meaning to Green, and I just want to pull a couple of things out of here. It's written by Dana Nigro. I've spoken with her. It's a very nice article. You stop by your local wine shop one evening and discover it's hosting an informal wine tasting. As you take a sip, the salesperson mentions that the winery is eco-friendly and farms its vineyards sustainably. But what does that really mean? And how do you know the winery is doing what it says? Increasingly, you can pick up the bottle and find out. In the past 3 years, now this was the May 2010 edition, in the past 3 years, more wine labels have begun sporting seals of certification for sustainability, which encompasses environmentally sound, socially equitable, and economically viable business practices. The three E's, environmentally sound, socially equitable, and economically viable. Consumers trying to figure out if a wine brand lives up to its green claims are getting help from the wine industry itself. In the United States and other countries, wineries and grower groups have been setting up voluntary certifications backed up by third-party audits to better define sustainability and give it the weight of organic and biodynamic certifications. These are certifications that allow wine growers to demonstrate that sustainability isn't just a cop-out that allows them to occasionally use chemicals while saying they're green. A truly sustainable business may surpass the requirements of organic certification. Where organic talks about pesticide use, sustainability goes to the next step and allows us to address things that don't get addressed in organic certifications, such as wind power, water conservation, employee benefits, materials handling, and providing natural habitat for birds and predators. California has close to 100,000 cases of certified wines reaching the market, split among two regions that helped develop sustainability best practices for the wine industry. Both the Lodi Wine Grape Commission and the Central Coast Vineyard team recently transformed established education and assessment programs, which was started back in 1992 and 96 respectively, into certifications open to wine growers in all areas. Both are points-based systems that require growers to earn a minimum score on an evaluation of practices ranging from soil management to employee education and training. The Lodi Rules for Sustainable Wine Growing certification got underway with the 2005 vintage, a workhorse appellation, and we'll talk about what that is, that produces more grapes than Napa and Sonoma combined. Lodi encompasses more than 100,000 acres of vines, of which 16,000 are now certified. And the commission expects another big jump this year, as some wineries are offering growers a per ton bonus to get their vineyard certified. And our guest today is Mike Wanless, who is the Director of Research and Sustainable Wine Growing for the Lodi Wine Grape Commission that we just talked about. Good morning, Mike. How are you doing?
Good morning, Michael. Very good.
Thanks. Thank you. Now, we're talking to you in Oakland, correct?
That's where I live, yes.
And how long of a drive is it to get to Lodi?
Oh, it's about an hour. Not very long.
Okay. I suspect, given your job, you probably spend a lot of time, as they say, in the field.
In the field. And more than I'd like at a desk.
Okay.
it goes to the territory.
You and I recently spent a day together, and you were gracious enough to show me around Lodi and show me some fields and show me some wine growing operations. We went to the commission offices and we met the executive director, Mark Chandler, and we met Stuart Spencer, the program director. And I will tell you, the Lodi Wine Grape Commission offices has a very, very nice wine tasting environment. And since I was with, an official of the company, I got the special wine tasting, so all of you can be jealous about that. It was very good. Mike, the growers in Lodi, I think you mentioned to me, there's a number of growers who are multi-generational families that have been growing grapes for four, five, six generations. Is that true?
Yes, it's a very historically rich region. Been around for a long time, since before the turn of the century, and as you mentioned, there's fourth and fifth, and I think there's probably some sixth-generation growers that do, as you mentioned, we produce 20 to 25% of the wine grapes grown in the U.S., actually. It's a large chunk of the production.
And in the grapes that are grown, just for people that don't know this this little bit, kind of the surface of wine growing and grapes 101, is that when you grow the grapes, you don't necessarily bottle them right on your own property, but sometimes a lot of these grapes are sold to other big producers like the Gallos and the, you know, whomever else, right?
Group, the Trincheros, yes. There's many wineries purchased from our region, and a number of them are actually sent up to Napa, where they incorporate them at the maximum amount of percentage that they can and still call them Napa.
Mm-hmm. Now, just a little more education for people listening. You know, wine, has this cachet, I guess, of being something that's cool and upscale and the sophisticated people use wine. That doesn't really match up with what wine growers want to hear, though, does it?
No. As an industry as a whole, there are certain price points that have that that elite status or elite feel to them. But what we like to get across to people, that wine's an everyday consumable, and that you should, if you can, and responsibly consume with every meal, probably not breakfast, it's a food. It's actually a food, and it goes with a lot of things, and it's about enjoying life and again, in a responsible way, and with family. So.
Well, as I mentioned at the beginning here a few minutes ago, sustainability in businesses is a really important principle when you're talking about socially responsible investing, because I'm going to talk about this at the end of the show, but principles in investing, when investors are looking for, is they're looking for to get a reasonable return, on their investment so they can meet their goals. And they're also looking to avoid companies and industries that blow up on them. Now, the market does move around. We all know that. But there are some situations and companies that seem to be more at risk than some others. And my approach to solving that problem is, let's look at companies that are exercising, and industries for that matter, that are exercising good, responsible, sustainable practices. Now, that's one of those definitions that's kind of squishy. And I want to give it to you real quick here. In 1987, the UN had a commission that came out with a definition that really stands the test of time as the principal definition. And sustainability is a company or an organization that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. And it seems to me that when I hear about things like I just read from the magazine about sustainable practices, that, gosh, agriculture seems like the very most basic thing, because we're dealing with the earth. So tell us about the Lodi Wine Grape Commission and how it helps companies, wine-growing companies, be sustainable.
Okay, it's, as we indicated earlier, there's a lot of families that have been in this business for a long time, and they're obviously interested in continuing to have the ability to do that for their offspring and then their offspring's offspring. So in about 1990 or earlier than that, we realized that there was going to be a slowdown in funding for research for viticulture, and people got together and then they decided that it needed to go beyond just viticulture research to cover what ultimately became the three E's. They needed to market our product line because we were not well known as a premium producing wine region, and to do vit research, viticulture research, as the quality and pest management. And then also, at that point, what was pretty interesting and progressive, they wanted us to do environmentally correct work. And so, to boil it all down, they wanted to do the right thing for the right reasons is sort of our mantra. So they established the commission by convincing 750 growers, which is a hard thing to do in any business, to vote for it, and it's 100,000 acres, to essentially tax themselves to do those three principles.
Mm-hmm.
That's evolved in, and you want me to go on how that's evolved into the rules?
For about 30 seconds.
Okay,
well,
we
can come back after the break.
We've been training people district-wide to be able to affect those principles in a couple ways.
Mm-hmm.
I will hit that harder when we come back.
Okay. The Lodi Wine Grape Commission has a number of members, and you're just touching on that. I'd like to talk about, when we come back, how membership in the commission is helping them become better sustainable growers, which, in the end result ends up allowing us as consumers to buy a higher quality product, believe it or not. We'll talk about that when we come back. This is the Socially Responsible Investing Show. We're talking about wines, wine grape growing, and how this industry is leading the way in sustainability. And we'll touch on that when we come back in about 2.5 minutes. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Socially Responsible Investing Show on AM 950. I'm your host, Mike Mullins, and our guest today is Mike Wanless, the Director of Research and Sustainable Wine Growing for the Lodi Wine Grape Commission in the Central Valley in California, right in the middle of the Central Valley. If you look at a map and you can spot Sacramento, just trace your finger directly south and you'll find Lodi. And I spent about a day out there recently with Mike, having a look at the Wine Grape Commission and driving around, showing me some different vineyards. And one of the vineyards we'd stopped at that he took me to was to show me how this one vineyard, which is very large, and is a multi-generation vineyard, with the fourth or fifth generation kids working there, how they had replanted native species alongside a river. They don't have to do it. They've owned the land forever. I don't have to do it, but one of the principles involved in the Lodi rules that we're going to talk about here in just a second has to do with making sure that the natural habitat around these vineyards has a lot of room for critters, good critters. Like, we have bats around here. I don't know about you. Bats kind of freak some people out, but I love to see bats because that means they're taking care of some of my mosquitoes. And that happens in the vineyard as well. And there are other kinds of birds and animals that help maintain good quality growing conditions in the vineyard. And that's part of the Lodi rules, right, Mike?
Exactly. We try to integrate biology into everything we do out there.
Mm-hmm. Mike and I can't quite hear you. Could you give me
Yes.
Thanks.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you better. Thank you.
All right. Back to where we were, doing the right thing for the right reasons.
Right.
We've been trying to train growers to utilize those biological systems, and that evolved into what we called actually biologically integrated farming,
mm-hmm.
Which incorporates soils and cover crops and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which then we developed our Lodi Wine Growers Workbook,
mm-hmm.
which is now in the second edition, and then we moved on into the rules, which, as you indicated, is a certified program.
Now, I have a copy of those, which you provided me with it. I really appreciate that. And they're quite detailed. I mean, they are really detailed. 9 chapters, correct?
That's right.
And
it's all on the web, too, for free if you want.
Okay. Yeah, by the way, what is that web address?
LodiWine, singular.com, LodiWine.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
It's a very interesting website. I've, of course, been there and had a chance to look around and visit. For anybody that's got a curiosity to think one level deeper other than just buying a bottle of wine at the store, you really kind of have an interest in this. You know, and I'm not going to be talking about buying wine stocks today. All right, that's, we're really looking at the bigger picture about how the wine growing industry has embraced sustainability as a principle. Now, Mike, tell me, what are the three biggest concerns or issues in wine growing, wine grape growing these days?
Well, for most farmers, it's price,
mm-hmm.
Then pest problems, and then probably our interface with people. When people live near farms or have a idea what farms do, that creates some issues.
How do you mean?
Well, people immediately next door to a farm don't understand that there's dust and odors and nighttime operations that might make some noise.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of goes with the territory, but as there's more people move closer to farms, and they don't really remember, or they never knew that's what farms are about. We try to minimize that, of course, and actually the Lodi Rules does go into some of those areas to try and minimize those impacts,
mm-hmm.
where we can.
Okay.
Such as we don't advocate as much disking or tilling the earth as we did before. We tend to leave the native cover or plant specialized cover crops.
Mm-hmm.
To keep the dust down, because keeping the dust down in the vineyard helps prevent pest problems.
Mm-hmm.
That's a large part.
Close the door, sorry.
And keeps the soil in the vineyard as opposed to moving off if there are large.
Okay. So let's take the first one. The first one you mentioned was price. Price of what?
The price of the product that the farmer is.
We're not talking about the finished wine now. We're talking about the actual price that the wine grape grower sells the grapes for.
That's correct.
That's the price we're talking about, okay?
The price, growers are paid by the ton for their grapes. And it's in the winery's best interest a lot of times, this gets into the weeds a bit, but to try and reduce tonnage, whereas the grower, if he's getting paid per ton, is going to put on as many tons as he can.
Yeah, I think you told me that, if I recall correctly, that some wineries have adopted a practice in this recessionary environment of only buying about 80% of the amount of grapes they would normally buy to make their product.
I can't speak to this. Yeah, I can from factual experience.
Okay.
Yes, the winery will not buy all the grapes they need to make all the wine they need for that year, because they're banking on being able to buy it on the what we call the bulk market. People make wine out of grapes, and a lot of growers are doing this just to protect themselves from that. And then they, depending on the market, if the bulk wine is cheaper, they come out ahead. If it's more expensive, they pay a little bit more, but they haven't had to pay storage costs or production costs and carry those costs throughout the whole 2 or 3 years.
So why is this a problem? I mean,
well, it's a problem because the growers have to, their vineyards are either planted and have no home for the product, or they for all of the product, or they would like to plant more, and for the same reason.
Sounds like farming to me.
Well, it is, but in annual farming, where you're planting grain or corn, you make that on an annual decision. And in grapes, you've made the decision anywhere from 3 to 20 years prior.
Yeah.
And the
reason for that, just to touch on that briefly, Mike, it seems to me that what we've got is a situation where when you're going to establish a vineyard, you start with the rootstock, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean,
correct.
You actually start with ground preparation.
Okay.
That would be part.
But when you're going to actually create a wine growing plant,
yes.
It starts
yes.
with establishing roots, and then you add clones?
The scion, which would be the variety. So you have to make a selection as to what rootstock you need to pick, which is complicated, and then you need to pick what particular variety you're going to plant.
Okay, so if it's Chardonnay, for example, you start with a Chardonnay plant.
Yes.
Okay. And then there are so many different varieties within the Chardonnay that you kind of attach a clone from that variety that you want, and that's what eventually grows the grape vine and the fruit. And it takes what? How many years do you think from the start to finish to have a product?
Well, it's at least 3 years to get a crop, a small crop. 5 years, you know, you're at full production.
Okay.
And then it's a year or so to get the wine out.
So when you say that it's not the same as an annual decision where 1 year a farmer may plant soybeans and the next year they may plant another thing, a corn, let's say. I mean, I'm not a farmer, so that could be wrong. But with grapes, you're kind of stuck with your decision for a pretty long period of time.
20 to 40 years.
Yeah, that's a long period of time. Well, when we come back, we're going to touch on this a little bit more. I want to talk about the second issue you raised. Before we finish that, I want to talk about how the Lodi Rules addresses the issue of price, and we'll touch on that when we come right back. That's the great music of Laura Caviani coming at you. LauraCaviani.com is the place to go to be able to get to her sounds. Good friend of ours. Thank you, Laura, for letting us use your music. Also, thanks to Wizard Academy in Eden Prairie. Our good friend Claude Chenard is the owner, and this is a company that does an outstanding job in tutoring for math and science and all topics. The summertime is a great time to try to pick up and strengthen some areas where your student may be weak, or yourself. Weak is a bad choice of words, where it could use some improvement or some additional intention. So thanks, Claude. And also the Dunn Brothers Coffee right by the library, our friends Ken and Sharon. Great friends, a great place to go when you want to meet folks for a little networking meeting or a meet and greet, or you're going to get together a small group of friends or family just to talk about things. It's not noisy in there. I mean, there's a little noise because every business has noise, but it's not as noisy as some of those coffee shops, I won't name any names, that you go in and they seem like they're a long hallway and there's virtually no place to stand or sit, so you have to take it outside, right? At Dunn Brothers, very comfortable, good seating, good lighting. Go see our friends at Dunn Brothers by the library. I will be there between 12 and 1 today. And I will be looking to speak with folks who want to come and talk about these topics, or any topic, in fact, that has to do with investing, sustainability, responsible investing, green, that whole area. So, again, back with Mike Wanless, the Director of Research for and Sustainable Wine Growing for the Lodi Wine Grape Association. The Lodi Wine Grape Commission. I sure am glad I didn't swear there. I would have hit the beep button, but we're okay. Mike, we were talking about the three issues, the biggest issues. The first you mentioned was the price of the crop. And we kind of stretched that out a little bit. We'll have to be a little bit more concise. It's my fault on these other ones. You talked about the issue, the problem with price is grower demand, is winery demand for the amount of grapes that they take, and how the long-term decision you make about what to plant in your vineyard, which is 3 to 5 years before you get sellable fruit, is an issue. You can't just change your mind next year and decide you're going to grow Pinot Noir grapes in that same land and get a crop right away. So how do the Lodi rules help growers with this price problem?
Well, as part of our training, I mentioned the Lodi Wine Growers Workbook. Well, that's actually basically a management system for wine growing, grape growing. And if you follow that system, you're going to tend to grow higher quality fruit. And wineries will pay more for quality. And I've had several wineries say to me that the reason they like our programs is that their growers grow better product.
There you go. That's what we want to know as wine drinkers, too.
Exactly. And that's a large part of the rest of the commission's effort is marketing the region as a premium wine growing region, which it is, and they've been very successful by the Mark and Stewart and the rest. It's but just as part of rules it is certified. It does cost money to pay for the auditors and things like that. And some wineries are now paying a premium or an incentive, we like to say, for their growers to be involved in the program.
Very and good.
Bogle, Warren Bogle's one, and Kevin at the, help me out here, Phillips Farms are paying us for their wines.
Michael David Winery.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Yeah, and they make a very tasty Zinfandel. You might want to look that up. Give me a call if you want to know the name of it. I don't want to promote their product. I'd like to promote the Lodi Wine Grape Commission instead. The second thing you mentioned was pests. Now, that's something that anybody that has a garden or is trying to grow roses or is trying even to grow something as simple as a perennial, we deal with pests, and some of us have to use pesticides, and that's for somebody that's trying to be organic, things like putting granular stuff on your lawn gets to be an issue. How is that an issue in the vineyard?
Well, Mother Nature is not very benevolent. She's always trying to take things back, so... And we're trying to make good stuff out of what she gives us. So periodically we have to interject because pests need to eat too.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately they like to eat what we want. But we try to utilize systems that minimize the amount of pests coming into the vineyard or utilize natural predators, so to speak, to take care of them, and that either is insects or all the way up to the owls and, as you mentioned, bats.
Well, and right, and we're not talking about, a pest. This is a very serious issue. There have been a couple of very historic times, once in the late 1800s in France, and then in the last couple of decades out in the United States, where pests managed to devastate the industry.
We have three or four going on right at any one time. We have Pierce's disease that is vectored by sharpshooters, and now we have the European grape moth, which doesn't eat much. It just destroys the fruit and creates rots inside the clusters, which make the wine not very good. Fortunately, we have products that are very benevolent that take care of that, but we still have to protect the product, and there's really at this point very few natural systems that will control the pest to a low enough quantity that it's meaningful to the
So
plant.
So how does the Lodi rules help solve that problem?
Well, a large part of rules is IPM, integrated pest management, where you set a threshold of the pest that you will tolerate. Then you monitor to that. You monitor the biological organisms that are controlling it. You measure the two of them, and if in fact the pest gets higher than that economic threshold, then you would apply the most a judicious amount of pesticide, which is the lowest toxicity material that you can.
Sort of a last resort kind of a thing.
It's a last resort, and even within that last resort, you're going to take if you have a choice, you're going to try and use the least impactive material.
Right. Now, the three E's that we touched on briefly are very critical to this, and the certification for sustainability encompasses environmentally sound, socially equitable, and economically viable business practices. Now, there may be times when there's a conflict between the environmentally sound and the economically viable, and that's where we're talking about the judicious use of something that's not toxic, that doesn't have, it's not like the old DDT where it basically killed everything.
The problem with DDT is not that it killed everything, but it stuck around too long.
Oh, okay.
And then got into other stuff.
Not good. Now, the third thing you mentioned was the vineyard neighbors, the dust and the whatever all that you're thinking of. What is that? Could you describe that problem to me?
Well, when somebody builds a house in the country so they can get away from the city lights and things like that, they're not always thinking that there's going to be a 10-ton piece of equipment running through the vineyard at night because there's not enough day. There's not enough hours in the day to do all the work we need to do.
Yep.
And then when it comes to harvest, we like to harvest at night when it's cool. The fruit's cool, so it's better for the quality.
Mm-hmm.
So those are just a couple of examples of where people might get upset when they're trying to sleep, mm-hmm. and we're still working.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've been working there for 100 years that way, and it's unfortunate, but it happens. And the other, sometimes the things we do make a little dust, and dust doesn't always stay where it's supposed to, even though we try. And so the main thing there is communication, and you try and talk to your neighbors and explain to them why we're doing and what we're doing, and sometimes a little wine helps to salve their nerves. But basically, we're not trying to, we don't want to irritate anyone.
So how does the Lodi Rules help with this issue?
Well, in it, communication is a large part of any management system, and so we hit on that slightly. It's the more importantly, we would, as we talked about earlier, that just using IPM would tend to reduce the number of times you have to go through the vineyard, and certainly would reduce the toxicity of crop management tools mm-hmm. that we have to use periodically, which people get upset about also. And then in terms of dust, if we tend to recommend using cover crops to reduce dust mm-hmm. in the vineyard, because dust by itself will help, will exacerbate mite problems with your
spot
pest. So,
well, in total, what we're really thinking about here, in my case, I like wine, and I like good wine. I like reasonably priced good wines, and I don't like bad wine. I'd rather drink water. I'm not a snob about this, but I mean, let's face it, if the wine doesn't taste good, I don't want to drink it. So how does the Lodi Rules and the Lodi Wine Grape Commission help me have good tasting wine?
Again, back to the Lodi Rules is basically a subset of the workbook and the Lodi Wine Growers workbook, and the workbook is a management system mm-hmm. that is intended to grow higher quality grapes.
Okay.
Quality grapes.
Now we've been in the details, kind of in the weeds, as you say, for probably about a half hour now. Let me pull it back up to this higher level. The Lodi Rules for sustainable wine growing, as I mentioned in that article that I read at the beginning of the show, has had a significant impact, really a primary impact, on how the state of the state of wine growers in California in particular have been addressing the issue of sustainability. And sustainability is the ability to meet current needs without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their needs. And certainly in farming, not depleting the soil, we know that that's a big deal. Everybody remembers the Dust Bowl stories from last decade or the last century. And the Lodi Wine Grape Commission has been instrumental in leading the industry towards sustainability. So this is really, for listeners, this is a good example of how an industry takes very seriously the economic benefits of having a good product and at the same time being responsible, in this case in the vineyard, responsible to neighbors, responsible and responsive to the economic needs that are out there. They want to sell their product like everybody that produces a product. And I really appreciate that the Lodi Wine Grape Commission has taken this lead in this, and that you're working so hard and so diligently at this. So one last question. Tell me, I didn't ask you at the beginning, what is it that you do? I know what your title is, but...
I try to help steer growers in the direction of more sustainability and how to manage their... We do research on either increasing quality or reducing pest pressure.
Right. So it's not just a matter of having published a workbook, but you're actually out there proactively helping these people apply these principles.
Oh, absolutely.
That's fabulous. I really appreciate it. And for me, looking for Lodi on the label is a way to get at these, and more of the wine grape growers in Lodi are using your standards. As I said, 16,000 cases, or 16...
Pretty much everybody, as part of the workbook, there's a self-assessment, and 95% of the growers self-assess themselves.
That's wonderful. Well, Mike, thanks a lot for being our guest on the show today. I wish I could send you a bottle of wine, but that would be kind of silly. So I'll just thank you for being with us today, and I look forward to talking to you another time. This is the Socially Responsible Investing Show on AM 950. In the fourth segment coming up, I'm going to talk about investing, a little bit different topic, so don't go away. You'll want to hear this. Here we are again, segment number four today of the Socially Responsible Investing Show here on AM 950, The Voice of Minnesota. Now, if you're interested in having a chat with me, I'm at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I cannot give you my wine recommendations on the air, although I'd be glad to tell you what I prefer in person. Similar to that, you may, if you've listened to this show before, you know that you have heard me say I cannot give specific recommendations for stocks, mutual funds, exchange-traded funds by name or by symbol. I'm restricted, actually prohibited is the word, by the regulator, FINRA, who regulates my company. I'm a financial consultant with RBC Wealth Management in Minneapolis, 25-year veteran of the business, seen a few cycles, a few ups and downs, glad to be coming out of the current down, but it's slow going, don't you know? You know that if you're an investor as well. Well, we have just had a conversation with Mike Wanless of the Lodi Wine Grape Association, Commission. And the reason I had them on the show was because this is an example of an industry, the wine grape growing industry, that is taken very, very seriously their responsibility to be good stewards in four key areas. The first is be good stewards of the environment. That's very, very clear. The Lodi rules are all about protecting the land, but it's an economic issue as well. The three E's we talked about is it needs to be economically viable, it needs to be environmentally sound, and it really does also need to be socially equitable. We didn't talk about the people that work in the vineyards. That's a topic that's been around for a long time. If you remember Cesar Chavez back decades ago with the wine growers in California getting some representation, it's pretty important stuff. But those three things, environmentally sound, socially equitable, and economically viable, the three E's are principles for how the wine grape growing industry is applying sustainability in the vineyard. So the first is the first of the four pillars that they look at is environmental. The second is community. He talked about one of the problems, one of the three biggest problems is people that live around vineyards, especially as more land is planted where there's already existing homes. There's a need to cooperate and coexist in a practical, proactive, positive way in your environment. You know, this is true of any company that has a headquarters or a plant or a facility. They need to get along with their neighbors. If they don't, they should be called to task for it. The third area is that companies need to be good stewards when it comes to their employees. And the fourth is they need to be good stewards when it comes to dealing with their customers, their consumers, their clients, or their patients, whatever the description is, but it's the people that use and buy their products and services. Now, what do investors' basic needs when it comes to this? You need a reasonable return matched to your goals, and you need to avoid investments that blow up. So when I bring something like wine growing to the table as a sustainable, an example of good sustainable industries, what I want you to get out of this is that you need to be selective and you need to be picky about where you put your investment dollars. You want to look for companies that are doing the right thing. And we didn't talk about this much because we ran out of time. But there are growers out there that work very, very hard to do things on their land that cost them money that nobody's compelling them to do because it's the right thing to take care of their land. It's the right thing to help them produce a product that they can sell, that they're going to make their living with. These things need to all work together. It's not just a matter of being a do-gooder. As an investor, you want to be able to do well with your investments, but at the same time, have a thought about doing good while you're doing that. So you need to be selective and be picky about where you put your investment dollars. I got a friend that's an investor that commented the other day that he thought maybe this would be a good time to buy a certain large oil stock that's been under pressure lately. You know the initials. I won't mention it on the air here. And I asked him why, and he said, well, you know, the stock's gotten awfully cheap. It'll probably rebound pretty quickly here, and I can make a few quick bucks. I told him I didn't think that was a good idea, and it's not because I'm opposed to making money. Far from it. But when you think about the liability that this particular company is going to have, this financial liability that's in the billions now and is only going to rise. I mean, even though it seems that the effect of the oil in the Gulf is not as bad as the worst case fears, the economic disruption in the area is just as severe as we thought it was going to be, and it may continue for a while. Why would you want to invest in a company that you know is going to be bleeding money? Where do you think that money comes from? They sell their product. They collect a bunch of money. They have expenses. If their expenses include billions of dollars in fines, fees, paying people off, you know, that have lost their livelihood, that means there's less money to come into the net bottom line for the company. So if it's a dividend-paying company, you may find that dividend gets suspended or reduced, or at best not be increased. And when you're buying a dividend paying stock, believe me, you want to buy a dividend paying stock that increases its dividend on a regular basis. I know who those companies are. Give me a call at 612-371-7859 and I'll tell you who those companies are. Now, what if you're a fund investor, you know, and you want to buy companies that are doing good, sustainable things? I mean, it's tough because you're not making the decision about what's in that fund. Maybe you're a variable annuity investor and you've got a VA, so-called, and it's got these sub-accounts with all these different kinds of mutual funds. I mean, it's almost impossible to know what's in those things. And they're good things to have, but it's almost impossible if you're trying to say, well, does it have that company or does it have this other company? Difficult to know. There are many mutual fund investment companies that are self-described as socially responsible or sustainable and responsible funds. And these companies tend to look not only at the economic viability, but they'll look at the environmental sensitivity and they'll look at the socially equitable side, the three E's. And some companies will call that the triple bottom line. There are mutual funds out there that use a social index. KLD is one of the sponsors of an index, and you can find their mutual funds. You can also find them as exchange-traded funds, which is my preference. There are sustainability indexes. There's one from the Dow Jones. It's actually called the Sustainability Index. And recently, a company launched a North American Sustainability Index. I can't mention the name on the air, but that's one of a kind. And they are the ones that are already looking for the kinds of companies that I'm telling you should be looking to buy. Can't give the recommendation on the air. I certainly would like to have a chance to talk to you about that at 612-371-7859. Now, this week on Monday, I will be a guest on the Nancy Nelson Show right away at the beginning of her show at 5 o'clock. We're going to talk about how some locally headquartered companies are donating to political campaigns through political action committees. And as an investor, as a person that advises investors, as a person that's looking for sustainable investing, you have to ask the question, what are the implications for investors in those companies that are making those donations? Is there a need for it to be representative of either their customers or their employees? More broadly, what should a Minnesota citizen consider doing when you agree with or when you disagree with those kinds of decisions? How does that affect your investing? Come see me today at Dunn Brothers between noon and 1. I'd be glad to have a chance to meet you and visit with you. Check with me online at michaelwmullins.com. Click on the link that says Listen to Mike Live, and you'll get a list of radio station, the list of all my podcasts, and you'll be able to go back and pick out a topic that you'd like to hear about. Call me at 612-371-7859 and ask for your free copy of my investment system, Wealth Building to Wealth Spending, The Story of Your Life. It's been my pleasure to talk about wine today. I think I'll maybe have some wine this evening. This is Mike Mullins, the host of the Socially Responsible Investing Show. See you next week.